Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
Christy, your mom.
You didn't know, our listeners didn't know, but my mom, she usually does the iCarly thing, which is like she mounts like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and does it with her fingers. She must have had like something wrong happen on her end. I think it's a brain function thing that happened. I don't know what happened to her, but she like mixed up the numbers at one point and then she just couldn't stop laughing silently. And so she couldn't really like cue me to do it. So that's, I thought that you guys would like to know that because I've messed up this intro so like a couple times. So at least it wasn't on me. So anyway,
this still is laughing, but not silently.
This is going to be an interesting episode of Buzzed Binging because we are doing season 2, episode 2 of Ted Lasso called Lavender. Yeah, and some of us are doing stuff, so there might be some background noise. We will try to prevent that as when we can. If you hear me go on the tangent, that might just be because something's going on in the background. So, or it's just me going on a tangent, either one. So yeah.
Tangent happens.
Mom, what are our disclaimers?
So our disclaimers are, as they always are, that there might be cursing, man, fuck it. Or that there might be spoilers for the rest of the episodes in season 2. And also, obviously, that there is buzzedness involved, although this is kind of a remnant of the rosé bubbles that I had previously that I don't think I need anymore. So I'm not actually drinking anything other than potentially water or coffee. Are you having anything additional to buzz?
Well, I have the remnants of my Dr. Pepper, which is just ice at this point, but
That's not a caffeine buzz. That's disappointing.
Okay. Well, I'm also potentially going to have some lemonade because I have some lemonade.
Oh, a sugar buzz. There you go. That works.
Sure.
I approve. There you go. And so we are going on with our series on Ted Lasso season 2. This is Ted Lasso season 2, episode 2, which is called Lavender. Mm-hmm. And it starts, I love this so much. It starts with this reality TV show called Lust Conquers All.
Yep. And then
with our least favorite human from the last season, Jamie Tart.
Well, actually, I think I hate Rupert.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, Rupert is what he's not even a human. He's like subhuman, so I don't count him.
Jesus. Jamie is up for elimination on Lust Conquers All, and he gets all cocky of being like, oh, I'm not going to get voted off, and then he is, and then he's like, what? Okay, whatever. And then you get to, he's on a talk show, and
one of those morning talk shows where like whatever, and I think morning talk shows in the UK are actually like worse. I do remember seeing them, and they're like so low budget, even like BBC ones, it's kind of like I'm in someone's living room. Kind of,
yeah, but he has this one line where the talk show host is like, we're here with loser Jamie Tart, and Jamie says, I am not just a loser, I'm the loser.
Yeah, don't be confused on me.
And I was like, yes you are Jamie, absolutely, but
in every imaginable way.
Well, then we see him with his manager, and we find out that Jamie left. What?
While he is on the talk show, this is like
I didn't mean that he wasn't with his manager yet. Sorry, we find out he left Manchester City after he first found out about that George Harrison died. Many years ago, well, at the point of like when this was made, it was 20 years ago, it's a little bit more now, but he decided that he wanted to live life to the fullest because George Harrison died 20 years ago, but he just found out about
you. What, 20 maybe? Okay.
Yeah, no, the talk show host has to be like, that was 20 years ago, and he's just like, but I just found out about it now. Okay, anyway, we find out that through a clip from about the coach, from the Manchester City coach that they're not going to be taking Jamie back. So,
right. So Man City, and he left Man City, and we get an explanation for that later. He left Man City to be on this really, really stupid reality show where he got kicked off the reality show in part because he had developed, quote unquote, a relationship with one of the other players on the game. And they ask him about it on the talk show, like, oh, you know, are you really with blah, blah, blah?
Are you going to wait for her?
And he's like, oh, no, that was just a strategy. and then, like, apparently he had jacuzzi sex with someone else on the show.
Somebody in, like, a closet or something.
It's just, like, ridiculous.
Or in a stall or something like that. It was something stupid.
It was something ridiculous. And he's like, oh, yeah, all of that was a strategy to be, like, better on the show or something like that. And I was like, well, obviously that didn't work, loser. And so,
Go
ahead.
Then you see him leaving the station, the TV station, and he's stopped by a couple of people to get, like, signatures and stuff like that. And you kind of just, it's a really good acting job by the, it's well done by the actor. You see a little bit of, you just see the disappointment.
Well, and you see him having to put that face on. And that's one of the things we've talked about before in other shows and other episodes. It is remarkable to see an actor acting.
Right? I love, like, it.
Deliberately.
The many layers of that concept, and I think that this actor does it very well. Then we go over to the office where Coach Beard has been sleeping there all night because him and his girlfriend got into a fight.
It's chess girl still.
Yeah, but I also, and then Nathan is being critical of the new kit guy because he's using
Nathan's being a dick. Let's just say it. He's being an asshole.
He's using lavender soap on the towels and stuff. And when Coach Beard, Nathan approaches Coach Beard about it, he's just like, what does this smell like? And he's like, a Parisian hotel or something. And it's just like,
like a Parisian whorehouse. He is more colorful in his description of it. Other people smell it. And this is the reason that this whole episode is called Lavender, right?
People smell different things, I guess.
And people smell it differently, and that's going to come up as we talk about it some more.
Yeah. I love this line of, do you sleep here? And he's like, perchance to dream here.
Right. No, I mean, there is the Shakespearean reference, but one of the things I also love about this is that Ted comes in, and, you know, it's not a Shakespearean reference, but it's a reference. He's like, so are you like Frank Sinatra? And he goes through this whole litany of everybody Frank Sinatra was involved with, Ava Gardner, who he divorced, you like Mia Farrow, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I'm starting to see that it might have been Frank that had the issue.
Mr. Blue Eyes or something.
Blue Eyes. Dude, Natalie.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's really sad. I mean, you hear somebody
who's like, I corrected it, mother. I'm sorry.
One of the most amazing singers of the last century. So
I'm aware.
Previous century than this one. Because, you know, I'm obviously old. But in any case, he compares like all these relationships to Frank Sinatra's relationships, and he's like, hey.
Then we find out that Higgins hired Dr. Sharon for the rest of the season.
Right, which is clearly something that is bugging the shit out of Ted.
Mm-hmm. And there's this funny back and forth about like what if Higgins should run stuff by Ted, but Ted's trying to make the point of like, oh, you don't have to run stuff by me. And then he's just, but you need to like send me a text. And it's like, okay, I will. And it's like, no, but you don't get it. You don't have to run stuff by me, but I would like a heads up. It's just like, okay, then no. And like he gets like encouragement from like Coach Beard, and it's like, don't give in. And he's just like, okay, then no. And it's like, right, perfect. There you go.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, Ted's basically trying to teach him to stand up for himself because Higgins has a real issue standing up for himself. And so that is part of his whole approach with this, but it's hard to tell. You know, again, Jason Sudeikis got the Emmy for this for a reason, right? I mean, he does such a great job going back and forth between being a hard ass and being encouraging, and being a hard ass and being encouraging just in this one scene. It's beautifully done. It really, really is incredibly well done.
Then we go over to Jamie and his manager. Basically, his manager tells him nobody wants him. And
right, but I mean, like, he is, it goes so far as, like, Jamie's like, oh, what about Real Madrid? What about whatever? And he, like, he picks up the phone. It's clearly, he's not going anywhere. He's like, Real Madrid, do you want him? No.
And then, like, a talent agent comes in. And he's it's basically like, oh, you should focus on your TV career or whatever. And Jamie,
she's just awful too. Like, she, like, the TV career thing that she offers him is some other one of these like sex reality show things.
Yeah.
And he's, well, you know.
Yeah, and he wants to go back to playing football though, so it's kind of a back and forth there. Then you go to Ted, who is trying to bring the doctor biscuits to start, like, getting to know her, I guess, on a personal level, and just kind of see what she's about.
This is, again, one of those, I am a humorless, awful person, not awful, no. But you know what I mean? Like, one of these people that lives so, in such an
particular way,
aesthetic kind of way, right? Like, you know, like, I do not enjoy life kind of way. That she's like, I don't eat sugar. And you know, she had that's a bite of
choice. But yeah, it's interesting because you get to see that. And then he goes over to Rebecca's office and he gives her the biscuits. And she notices that one of them's been bitten into. It's like, what the fuck is this? And he's just like, oh, I tried to give the doctor your biscuits. And she's like, what? Why? And then he's just like, oh, no. But apparently she doesn't eat sugar. And it's just like, that's ridiculous. Who doesn't eat sugar?
I mean, I think she calls her something like what a bitch or what a prick or something like that. Like, who doesn't eat sugar? What is wrong with you? But even when Ted does it, even when Ted's directly interacting with the doctor, he tells her, like, you know, it's interesting that you have not learned to control your relationship with sugar, basically. I mean, he's like, you know, I used to deprive myself of video games, which is something I loved. And really it was more of an issue of me controlling my desire to play video games and instead of depriving myself of something that I really enjoy, mm-hmm. I learned to control my relationship with it. And she stares at him. And again, this is another one of those themes that goes throughout this season, which is, even the people who are supposed to be teaching you are learning
about themselves and about other people. And then you go, Ted and Rebecca talk about how therapy is basically like, you could just, it's a function of having friends. Like, you should just, part of having friends is just them being part of your therapy. Like, you, oh, like, right. Talking things out with them, but then then he's just like, well, how are you doing? And she's just like, fine. And then she's just like, well, how are you? And it's like, do you have anything you want to talk about? And he's like, no. And it's like, see, done. And it's just like, okay, that's not helping. That's not necessarily true. It can be a function of your friendship, and that certainly is a part of it, but like, it was really funny how they were just like, I don't have anything to talk about with you. And it's like, all right, great.
Well, and one of the things about the therapeutic approach, and it's true also with friendships, is that you're going to get out of it what you put into it, number one. And number two, that what you're not going to explore an area until you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Until you're ready to make yourself vulnerable with that other person on about this issue, you're not going to learn about it. You're not going to explore it. You're not going to get any therapeutic value out of it. So there is truth in the idea that you can do this without a professional.
Yeah.
And I think that is a value that sometimes gets a little bit lost, and it gets a little bit lost in this season too. It's like, oh, well, he clearly, you know, there's going to be stuff about like therapy being valuable, and therapy is valuable for a lot of people in a lot of situations, but just even having someone to talk to about stuff, whether it is a friend, whether it is a spouse, whether it is, you know, whomever.
Yeah.
Therapist is hugely valuable. And that is part of the whole mental health aspect to this season.
Yeah. And then we go over to Keely, and Jamie in sunglasses and a hat is watching her from like us in a cafe. And she's just like,
stalker. Oh my God.
So funny. But then he approaches Keely about, hey, do you think they'd take me back at Richmond? And you don't see all of the interaction that we find out late. Well, we'll get there. But then we go over to Roy and.
Oh, no, no, no. We have to back up because he actually denies being a stalker. And he's like, well, I've only been following you for the last few minutes. I've only been following you for the last hour. I've been following you for your entire lunch. Well, but he's sweet and honest about it. And Keely's response to he explains why he's been following her is that he deleted her number out of his phone and he wanted to talk to someone. Again, it's that therapeutic value thing. He needs to talk to someone about the situation that he is in with his identity crisis. I want to be a footballer again, right? Mm-hmm. Physically, he is able, unlike Roy. And so he has this whole discussion with her, and her one response, the thing she hones in on is like, you deleted my number out of your phone.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
It is cute.
And then we go over to Roy, and his team of 9-year-old girls have lost the championship. And he basically says that he wants the kids to remember this feeling of loss. And they get consolation trophies of like best dressed. And he's just like, they're all wearing the fucking same thing. And he's just like, I guess you. And then he's just like, gives the box to the kids, just being like, give it to yourself. I don't, they're, it's not worth it. And then he says, I hope you come back and play next year, but only if you fucking mean it.
right. And I love all of that. I love just the whole consolation trophy thing, which, you know, it has become kind of a meme and a joke and all of those things, but it's still there.
Yeah.
Right. This idea of, well, you know, I was best dressed on the team that's all wearing the same thing. You know, it's just insane. This idea that we're going to make everybody feel good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Roy is kind of like, look, you know, part of what inspires you is not necessarily feeling good. And so that is a really fun response to all that. He's gruff with the girls, and they, and right at the end too, he's like, ah, Harry, you all mean it, only if you fucking mean it. And they all think it is hilarious.
I think this is very accurate in how kids would respond to this.
Right. Well, and one of the other things that he makes this comment, I love it, is like, one of the 9-year-olds got excluded. Like, he comes back to the apartment.
I know you're talking about.
With Keely. And he's like, yeah, we lost and it's terrible and blah, blah, blah. And he's talking more or less to himself because Keely's not like sitting there listening because she's upstairs. And he's talking about, oh, one of my 9-year-olds got ejected from the game because apparently they're not allowed to do headers because of, oh, their, like, you know, the head injuries. Yeah, their brain development, whatever.
It's so funny.
It is very, very funny. But he makes his way upstairs within the house that they share.
Yeah.
He is, as they put it, having a wank.
Getting off to Roy's retirement speech, where he's like bursting out and he's like croaking things out in through tears, like, I really love this game and that kind of stuff. And and he thinks it's ridiculous because he's being quote unquote pathetic, and he doesn't like that she's enjoying his like weakest moment. But she tells him that she has not really seen him be that passionate and vulnerable since he retired. And she really loves that openness and vulnerability. And that's what she really values in a person, which I think is a really good element to Keely's character. I think that she tries to, she's very honest with people, but she also really tries to be frank with them about being open to everything, including emotional vulnerability, which is a big step for Roy. And then she says something along the lines of, "You're like Jamie, like that." And then he's just like, "I didn't think this conversation could get any worse."
Well, right, because in his mind, and again, you know, I identify with Roy on multiple levels. It's like, in his mind, like, you know, he's being vulnerable, and that is, in for him, bad. That's a negative. But then anything involving being compared to Jamie is a huge negative. It's not just a negative. It's like, this is my enemy. This is my antithesis. How could you associate me with him? And she points out, like, I saw him today. It's like, oh shit. Like, how much worse is this day going to get, right?
Well, no, she says, yeah, I saw him, and he approached her about going back to Richmond. And Royce is like, well, what did you say? And she's just like, I told him he's talking to the wrong person. And he's just like, good. Because it, honestly, he is asking the wrong person, because it's not her decision. And
right. Then, good, bad, but also in the scope of people that Jamie can talk to, though, whose opinion he trusts. And this is what we're talking about with the whole mental health thing. He's talking to the wrong person who can make a decision, but he is getting valuable feedback for him as a human, because he values Keely's opinion.
Yeah. And then we go over to Jamie and Ted. Jamie approaches Ted in the pub, and he basically, the gist of the scene is that he wants to play for Richmond, but Ted tells Jamie it really, like, he's a great player, but it really isn't for the best.
Right, because he has destroyed so many relationships, and he has undermined so many of the players.
And the trio, and the trio in the pub, they take a picture of Jamie and Ted sharing a beer or whatever, and that circulates, and the team sees it, and they assume that that's Ted letting him back on the team. And they are not happy about it.
Right. And among the people who are most upset about it is Sam. And of course, personally love Sam. And he gets a lot of development in this season, which is great because he's such a great character.
Yeah.
But he is very, very upset about it because he was the person that Jamie shat on the most.
Yeah. And he's also the one that has improved the most, and he has been like acting more as a leader in the group at this point. So
And Roy's left. So both Jamie, who is a leader as far as like scoring and like physical ability, I guess, overall, has left. But Roy, who is kind of, again, heart of the team kind of guy, and you know, perfectionist maybe, has left. And so they need people to fill that void. And Sam's been one of those people, Sam, obviously, and Danny. Mm-hmm. And Sam's like, this totally undermines me.
Yeah. And so they're at practice, and Sam storms off the field dramatically. And basically, he confronts Ted about how he's mad that he didn't ask the team about, because he still assumes that Ted let Jamie back on the team. He's really upset with Ted that he didn't mention this to or ask any of the team members about this big decision. And he really hated the way that Jamie made him feel. And he does not want that, a repeat of that. And so he's very upset with Ted. And then Ted's just like, well, I didn't need to mention it because it never happened. I'm not letting him back on the team. I didn't say yes. And then he's just like, oh, I'm sorry. Did anybody see me storm off the field? And he's just like, oh no, everybody saw you like storm off the field, Sam. Of course they did. And he does apologize. He really does.
Well, Sam, I mean, again, this interchange is done so sweetly, and again, it's beautifully acted. Sam is an incredible actor, whoever plays him. And he is, you know, what he says right at the end of it, like, Ted's kind of like, hey, you know, I'm going to have to make you laugh. Like, I hope you were going to do that. It is so well done, as, you know, the indignance that Sam feels, like, how could you undermine me? and Ted being, you know, like kind of the foil to that of like, he's indignant that like you'd assume that I was going to do that, but you, that's not happening. I'm really sorry that the Twitterverse said that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I love too that they intersperse, and I'm going to throw this out there, that they throw out like how much social media undermines people's self-confidence and their confidence in their the people with whom they function and work, even in this fucked up environment, in this environment that, you know, it is a crucible. You know, being on a football team in the UK, I'm sure is like, you know, Premier League scary, whatever. But I think that it is really kind of cool that they've thrown that modern element into it, because that is very, very true for everybody who's trying to function in the world today. So I think I like that they include that. And I like that, you know, they include the fact that Sam's misunderstood it, misconstrued it, not through any fault of his, and that he accepts that Ted, and he knows that Ted's being honest. And one of the things that Sam says, and I love this so much, she's like, you know, my dad has told me that he's really glad I'm playing with you every time he sees us. Like, he feels like he's really happy I'm playing for you because he trusts you. And I, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to move on, but what?
Nothing.
Did you have more to say?
I do not on that issue. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
We noticed that, well, I noticed that Higgins moved his office into the weight room.
God bless Higgins. And apparently observed the entirety of this interchange.
Yeah, and then you see that Roy is doing the TV gig and he's really nervous. And he's on the phone with Keely, and Keely just encourages him. It's like, you got this. You're Roy fucking Kent. You got this. And then you go over to the actual like cat like recording of it, and I think it's live. So
No! You skipped something. You skipped one of my favorite Roy Kent moments in this episode, where like he's got the makeup person, and the makeup person is like, "So what do you normally do with your brows?" And I don't fuck with them at all.
I think it's his lashes, and it's like, I leave them the fuck alone.
I leave them the fuck alone. What are you talking about? It's so unbelievably funny because he's Roy fucking Kent, right?
Yeah, the actual like recording of it, which is live, and they're asking about, oh, how do you think that this team did, or I think it is Manchester City or something like that. And Roy's like,
Man City versus Chelsea, and Chelsea lost.
Chelsea lost. And he's just like, I think they played like fucking shit. And then it's just like, oh, sorry for the language.
Faulty language, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's just like, well, no, I think they played like shit. He's very blunt, and everyone loves him.
Right. And I did write down some of this, if you can give me just like half a second, because I'm trying to do multiple things at once, which is never a good idea, as you know. But I wrote down, like, he talks about, you know, Chelsea played like shit. You should never be on the pitch at home. And he's talking about, you know, this is a home game and they're not acting like a home team, waiting for the handsy Father Christmas. they're like a bunch of kids waiting for the handsy Father Christmas to like, you know, touch them at Christmas time. And so they've got like the guys in the pub, of course, are watching this because the guys in the pub watch this stuff, right? And the guys in the pub are like going through the, like, oh, it's fucking awesome, he's fucking Roy Kent, blah, blah, blah. And the nice guy, the little one that you like so much, just like, I enjoy his candor.
I love Paul.
He's just so funny. He's great. So, so, so great. And the main, I guess it's the main pundit, says, I have to apologize for nearly every word that Roy Kent said.
Yeah. And then but it's a success. And they're moving. Then we go over to the office or whatever, and we find out that Higgins is going to move his stuff into Nate's office. Nate's kind of hesitant because I think that he's just gotten so used to having like his own office, his own space. He like his the like it's what shows how that he was promoted, and he's very proud of it.
I will say this about Nate. I think, and this is going to be something that develops over the course of the season too. Nate gets a little power mad, right?
We get to that at the end of the season.
Right, but it's happening even in these episodes. Like very early on, he calls in the minion that had washed the towels with the lavender soap and dresses him down for it. And pretty much everything the minion does is not right. Yeah. I mean, he's very
critical.
He's very critical. He calls the guy in about it, like when very early in the episode, he calls the guy in about it. And like the guy has to knock on and go through multiple doors to even talk to Nate about it. And it's like unnecessarily bureaucratic and brutal and, you know, just ugly. And Nate, I think, has felt stepped on and oppressed and whatever for so long that he feels like anyone beneath him has to go through that too. And it is really...
It's sad to see.
It is. It is very much so.
Well, then we go back to Roy and Keely, and Roy has come back from the newscast, and he... And Keely's just like, well, you were fantastic. How'd it go? I know you're going to say it was shit, but still, I want to know. And then he basically doesn't, he doesn't really tell her anything except thank you for pushing me to do this. And then he gets her phone, puts on his retirement video, puts an ear, like an AirPod in her ear, and is just like, okay, I'm going to thank you properly now. And then just like they do whatever. And so, just to thank her properly and that kind of stuff. And
when we say whatever, we are going to point out that this is a show that is on a cable streaming network, and they show or suggest things that are not necessarily for the younger set.
Well, we already talked about Bridgerton. This isn't new. It's just...
No. I'm just pointing it out in case people are, like, surprised that a show like Ted Lasso has sexual stuff in it. It's got sexual stuff in it. So there you go.
Not too much, though. I mean, there's some, but it's usually more just suggested, less shown. Anyway, then we go over to Rebecca's office and we find out that Dubai Air, which is a sponsor, chose Sam to be their spokesperson, which will come into play later. And then Higgins is looking out the window. Well, there is a moment earlier where I forget when, but Higgins and the Diamond Dogs are in the office and they're debating on whether or not to let Jamie back in. It's two against two, basically, where, like, I think Coach Beard and Nate don't want him back, but then Higgins and Ted kind of do. And so, because they want four, they want to do well, but they are concerned about the team morale and stuff like that. But then you get to this point where Higgins is looking out the window, and then it's snowing, and it's dramatic.
Oh, wait, let me back up. So part of Ted's reasoning... And part of his argument for the return of Jamie, because Sam has been very clear, like Jamie made him feel horrible and he played badly when Jamie was there. And, you know, I think Ted is very sympathetic to that. But one of the things that Ted points to is that, you know, Ted himself, and I think there's discussion about this in this episode, that Ted had a good dad, not a dad who was horribly hard on him. But Jamie did not. And part of what Ted says when they're discussing this is that, you know, we want to give people second chances. You want to be the good dad kind of thing. And Jamie's never had that, whereas Sam has, clearly. Sam's got a good family foundation. That's part of his reasoning for, like, maybe we let Jamie come back to be a better person.
Yeah, give him a second chance. And they do in the end. Jamie does get a second chance, and the episode ends with him walking in on the pitch. It's snowing, it's dramatic, and that's the end of the episode.
I do love snow, so that's a thing, and I love that they acknowledge that, you know, there are elements. Well, and you know, the elements, is Jamie the snow on the pitch kind of thing? Is he the person who's going to make it more difficult to play? Mm-hmm. Right. I'm reading symbolism in there that probably was not intended, but whatever, fuck it. Right. So what was your best part of this episode?
I love Roy. I think that I love his moment. All of his moments hit for me. I think they're all really funny. I think that especially including the part at the beginning with thinking himself pathetic, looking back at his retirement video while Keely sees all the good in it, and a lot of good. But then another thing I actually put was Jamie. I actually really liked his moments in this episode because, well, first of all, it was funny. Second, I think that he definitely needed that kick in the pants to really strike down his ego a little bit, because he really needed to see himself more, less as a deity and more as a human being who is, yes, he has a lot of talent, but he also needs to know what to do with it and how to treat people better and to not just abandon things because something better comes along sometimes. Because if it's something he's passionate about, like when he was playing football, regardless if it was Manchester City or whatever, he took all of that for granted. And so I think that his arc in this is well done. And I honestly forgot most of his stuff this season, so I'm curious to see how that goes. I forgot, but still, what about you?
I'm going to respond to some of the things that you said, in part because my favorite part is probably pretty obvious, is everything about Roy on this show as a football pundit. He is just,
there are some moments later on. I'm just so excited.
Oh yeah, but I mean, he just says it, right? And of course, you know, on some level, I have been that person and I love it, and it is great. But it is also this, his coming back into his own a little bit, which is, it's important to his character and everything else. I want to respond to some of the stuff you said about Jamie, though. And I think one of the things we kind of hopped over is that Jamie, in his conversation with Ted at the pub, tells Ted, part of the reason that he went on the stupid reality show and quit Man City was to fuck with his dad, Jamie's dad. Because he was my dad was keeping track of how many hours I played or how many minutes I played and, you know, how well I did and how many goals I scored. And, you know, just stupid, petty, statistical bullshit. And that's all he meant to his father. And that really, he just couldn't live with that. And so he kind of just said, fuck it, without thinking of the bigger picture of, who he is and what his talents are. Which was short-sighted of him, but again, I think that's Jamie all over. He's very young and he is short-sighted. So that I did not put that as the best part, but I agree with you, especially in the context of the entire season, that Jamie is someone who's not going to be the worst part of every episode this season.
Not every episode.
Nope.
I can guarantee that.
No. Well, he wasn't the worst part of every single episode last season either.
But not every single episode. I tried to vary it towards the end. And I don't think we also, this is just a random thing, I remember mentioning last episode that Rebecca is starting a new dating site. I don't think I mentioned that in this one because
it really was kind of minor.
It was very mine. It was a throwaway line with Keely. She was just okay, well, what should I put? Should I put that I'm rich in my profile? It's as long as it's not preceded by filthy. And then you see Rebecca just backspacing. And it's funny. But that's basically it. She's going to be starting a new dating on a different dating site, and we'll see how that goes. But then, yeah. That's just a random thing I wanted to mention. You go ahead. What did you have any other best parts?
I did not have any best parts. What was your worst part?
Nate's attitude. It's already started, and I really liked Nate in the first season because he was that underdog that among all the other underdogs, he was definitely one that I could relate to, and I think a lot of people could because like it was really cute how he was just really insecure and he had like. He was like, oh, you remembered my name. That's amazing. Like, it's just kind of funny, like his attitude towards everything. And you see how that's changed by when he was given the position of assistant coach. And it's starting to change for the worse. And even just letting Higgins share his office seems to be a big ask for him for some reason. And even though it's just Higgins and Higgins is all like, oh, twins or something. And it's just like office twins or something cute. And then he's just like, yeah, office twins. And it's like, dude, come on. You're just sharing an office with people. The fact that you have an office at all is a gift. Like, I mean, you have to work for it and he is working for it, but it's just like his attitude towards people he thinks of as lesser than him now is not something I vibe with. I don't like it. Anyway, yeah. What about you?
Nate was my worst part too. Nate being a dick to his minion particularly. But I think that it is it's one of those foibles that I see in myself, that pettiness. You know, like I have an office, you know, I don't need people in my office. I need my privacy or whatever. Whatever fucking bullshit Nate thinks is the office privilege, right? I could see myself being petty about like I want my office and I'm gonna share it with somebody else. It is interesting to me to see that dynamic in this context,
yeah.
Especially from somebody who was the towel boy very recently.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta acknowledge that you're just a minion in the scheme of things. All of us are, all the time. So I agree. Nate was my worst part for this episode. What was your grade for this episode?
I gave it a B+. I think it's still lacking a little bit of that humor that I like, but Roy is bringing it back full force with that pundit thing and all that stuff. I think that it was interesting the way that they reintroduced Jamie with like back to the team with like a really dramatic thing. I mean, like, yeah, it is very dramatic, but it also seemed like you had these people like the Coach Beard and all that stuff, and they're just like looking on and like, ugh, I can't believe that Ted let him back here or whatever. It's like it's like they didn't mention, like, talk to each other about it. Like, they did, it was mentioned. So I think it's just like, I think it was an interesting choice to bring him back. I think it's a good idea because I think that Jamie needs more character development than just being a dick, and I'm excited for that. I think that I don't really remember much of what happens after this, well, at least with certain characters. I kind of hope that the rest of the team and not just like Sam and Jamie get more development, because I really did like how the first season did at least give them a little bit of the rest of the team, a little bit more characterization. Like, I remember one episode, like the goalie like scored, what was the main saver of all of, like, the savior of the team, because they saved all the goals and that was why the other team didn't get score at all. But then you don't really, I've not gotten the idea that like the rest of the team has gotten, other than like that random Dutch guy. I hope that you see more of the rest of the team develop with like the doctor as well and all that stuff. So that's exciting. What about you?
I gave it a B+. I actually might downgrade it to a B, although that's hard for me because Roy is so fucking awesome in this episode particularly. This Roy's speech as a pundit is one of those things I remembered you know, even from when we watched it originally. So it's in this episode, I'm like, oh God, I fucking love him. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for me to downgrade from a B+, but I felt like there wasn't the kind of development I was hoping for, or the development of, or positive development, maybe. I mean, because we're seeing negative development for Nate, obviously. I just wonder, and in case the bingers are wondering, I've switched to coffee and it's now the caffeine binge, for those of you who are interested. I just don't feel like this was the best episode of the season. I do think there are better ones.
I think it was a little bit better. Well, that's a good question. Did I think it was better than last episode? Because I gave the last episode a B.
Right. And I do think this is not as good as the last episode. Last episode was better to me.
I think that it's more on par with the last episode. So maybe I would downgrade it to a B. Yeah, I might just give it a B at this point because I think, yeah, I think Roy is just the saving grace of everything. So, but I did like to the point, to a certain degree, but I don't know. We'll see. I think it's a B.
Okay, well, this has been fun and it continues to be fun and I am enjoying watching where these characters go. I remember certain things about this season that we're doing right now, but I don't remember all of it. There are details of it that I've clearly purged. So I'm really interested to see how we get from where we are right now
to where we end up.
Yeah. And so I think this is going to be fun to watch, and I hope that our listeners join in and that we all get to do this together. So please join us as we go forward, and cheers.